It's always a pleasure and enlightening to discuss about Srila Prabhupada, and especially as Guru Purnima is coming. It's especially suitable. It's always suitable anytime, any place, every time to do so. We all know that Srila Prabhupada went through many difficulties to come to the West and save us. He left his austere but settled and happy routine in Vrindavan to get on that ship. Even to get on the ship, he had to go through so many difficulties. And then on the voyage, he suffered heart attacks. When he landed, he went to stay with people he didn't know who were nice but meat-eaters. And so many. Practically his whole life story, the whole preaching, it's just one of struggle. ISKCON got going, but there were so many struggles all the way through. Prabhupada was a fighter. He relished that. By Krishna's grace, everything flourished, although he could have died alone, homeless, on the streets of New York. I want to focus now on the struggles that Srila Prabhupada went through in his domestic life. We don't discuss that so much. I'm going to speak mostly according to what I know about from what is described in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. Defining moment in Srila Prabhupada's life was when in 1911 he first met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and got the order from him to preach Krishna consciousness in the Western world. Now, excuse me if it sounds that I'm just talking in a biographical way, and it may sound somewhat as if we're discussing just another person of this material world. They went through this stage in their life and that stage of their life. We know that Srila Prabhupada is a nitya siddha, eternally perfect devotee of Krishna, but all the devotees of Krishna who come to this world, they don't behave as if they were some kind of Superman. Of course, they do in some ways, but in other ways, they appear to go through the six stages of Sharavikara, that is, birth, growth, sustenance, production of byproducts, decline, and death. So it appears that they go through various stages, and even mentally and even spiritually. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we learn from his autobiography, was not Krishna conscious at some stage of his life. Of course he was, but then he wasn't. I've discussed this in one lecture I gave some years ago, this point about his life. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, he went through various stages also, at least seemingly, although we know he's an eternally perfect devotee of Krishna. So when Srila Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it was a defining point in his life, a turning point in his life. He's been a devotee of Krishna since the beginning of his life. He's raised in a Vaishnava family. When he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was a married man. He had a family to look after, and he was a devotee, but his attention was, his main focus in life was family maintenance. But the meeting with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a wake-up call. It was a moment of great happiness for him, where he understood that although the Vaishnavism he had been raised in was his family religion and he was attached to that, but there's actually an intelligent basis to it that could be presented in terms of the modern education, the paradigms of modern education that he had received. His wife was also a devotee. Her name was Radharani. That was the name she was given. She could have been given the name of Durga, but she was given the name. She was from a devotee family also, a typical average devotee, you could say. She didn't share Srila Prabhupada's passion for practicing Krishna consciousness very seriously, and definitely not for preaching Krishna consciousness. That became a struggle. We're talking about Srila Prabhupada's difficulties and struggles because his own aspirations were not shared by his wife. No doubt she liked to worship at home. She was from a Vaishnava family, and she didn't have any problems with her husband being a Vaishnava, but it's the common thing we find in religionists everywhere throughout the world, definitely among Hindus. They like if their children are religious, but not too much. So she was someone like that. She must have attended festivals like Janmashtami, maybe observed them at home. But she had no serious bad habits. Tea drinking wasn't to her husband's taste, but he didn't object to it to the extent that he would throw her out of the house for that. She was a typical, simple, faithful Hindu wife with no major aspirations in life. Well, nowadays, women, men, they from the middle class, they all have mostly aspirations far above their abilities. They want to be big and rich and famous and successful and all these things. But mostly in those days, people were content if they had some modest income, and the life went on like that. The people, as Srila Prabhupada has described, people in general weren't materialistic in the sense of striving to be very successful materially. Although Abhay himself did want to be he had that Vaishya spirit in him, you could say. He did want to be a success in his business. He'd been predicted that he would be one of the richest men in India, very, very rich. So if you say Vaishya spirit, he came from a Vaishya family. Again, it's not saying that Prabhupada is a mundane person, but it's like saying that Arjuna naturally had Kshatriya spirit, being born in such a family with that culture. He had a Kshatriya spirit, and Srila Prabhupada, we can say he had a Vaishya spirit in as much as he was quite comfortable in the business world, and although he could have gone into some kind of clerical service or some such thing, he dived into the business world. His father was businessman also, but Abhay went into a different line. And his wife didn't have a problem with that. But the struggle that Abhay had was that he also had very strong spiritual aspirations, and his wife didn't. She was materialistic, not in a gross way, but she was a devotee, her priority in life was living comfortably, like that. Comfortably again, not aspirations for hugely successful, but she was happy to be a simple, faithful Hindu wife. She was more interested that the money kept coming in than in her husband's preaching drive, and the money coming in when you're starting a business, and it's a bit dicey. Not everyone can take up a business. It's not a guaranteed income. If you have a job with a salary, then there's fixed income and there's no worry about that. But if you're doing business, then it's always, especially when you're just setting up, if it doesn't get off the ground, then you're always in anxiety about whether it's, there's always a doubt whether it's going to, the business is going to fly or not. And she was, I presume she was a bit bewildered by how her, she couldn't relate to how her husband was so much into this bhakti, and everyone would have a guru, but the Vaishnav gurus didn't, they didn't demand anything of their disciples. They said they'd come around once a year and get some dakshina and some respect and this and that. Otherwise, they left their disciples alone. They didn't give them any mission to fulfill in life. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was obviously different, and he wanted that his householder disciples also be very, very dedicated. And especially because Abhay, as he was known at the time, he'd been given the mandate by his guru at their very first meeting to preach Krishna consciousness in the English language. So he was always thinking about how he could fulfill that. At the same time that he was, to all external appearances, a young and ambitious businessman. So he was into the business life. You can't succeed in business unless you're into it. It doesn't work. It's like Krishna consciousness. You can't, if you do it half-heartedly, you don't get anywhere, and you're likely to just lose everything. She wouldn't have minded if her husband, no doubt she wouldn't have minded if her husband had practiced his bhajan at home, and maybe if he'd become a famous kirtanier or a famous speaker, she wouldn't mind, as long as what he did outside wouldn't bother her so much. But she might even like the prestige that came from him being a reputed kirtanier and a reputed speaker of Vaishnava topics. But again, her main concern was that the money kept coming in, so that she could live with her children. That was her main interest, and she didn't relate at all to his idea of calling people, preaching, and trying to get people to change their lives. Abhay's business was pharmaceutical. He didn't like Western medicine himself. He didn't use it, and he scorned people. Privately, he scorned them for using it, because he mentioned about the Nehrus, who were his customers in Allahabad, that they never liked Indian medicine. They only wanted Western medicine. So he scorned them for that. They're so non-Indian and non-traditional. Nehru's means, yeah, the Pandit Nehru, and before that, Motilal, I guess. And he knew Indira as a young girl. But he was in the pharmaceutical line. By chance or whatever, he got in that line, and no doubt he saw in that a great opportunity. It wasn't developed at that time throughout the whole of India. And India, undivided India, which includes what is now, not only what is now India, but the Pakistan, what's now Pakistan, and also Bangladesh and Burma. So it was a very, well, Burma, anyway. It was a huge field, so he had great hope he could develop it and do very well in it. Again, he was prophesied in his astrological chart that he'd become fabulously rich, and he presumed that by doing his business he would do so. And he wasn't just he had a bifurcated interests, that he was interested in business materialistically, and he was interested in filling his guru's order spiritually, but he also thought that if he made lots of money, he could contribute substantially to his Guru Maharaj's mission. Well, it happened that he did become fabulously rich, but not in the business field. There was another prediction about him, that when he was 70 years old, he would cross over the ocean and establish 108 temples. So it came in another way. And yeah, he struggled to establish Krishna consciousness in the world. He had a lot of practice in struggling. In the business means struggle. There may be some businesses which are not much struggle. Just like here in India, if you have a gas canister agency, it's a straightforward business. You have regular customers. People come, they give the money, and it's not something you can expand much, but it gives a good industry, a good income. But in the field Srila Prabhupada was in, he wasn't the only one getting into it. And there was competition. So apart from the struggle or the underlying tension with his wife, there was also the struggle in the business field, and at some time his failed and it went down. And there's one of Srila Prabhupada's early letters which is preserved. It appears to be to his father-in-law. It's not clear, in which he's begging for 500 rupees as a loan to save him from some humiliation. And we can just imagine that his wife wasn't very happy with this, and his wife's relatives were not very happy with this, and they may have disparaged him. And to her, that what's going on with your husband? He's just some failure guy, can't get his act together, useless fellow. They'd have been grumbling. Why is he coming to us? We thought he was going to do business and make you rich, and now we have to give money to him, something like that. And the sons, the Srila Prabhupada's sons didn't help him either. He thought that as they grew older, they could help him in the business. But they didn't. They were disappointing to him both materially and spiritually, because they also didn't take up Krishna consciousness very seriously. In fact, the first son, Mathura Mohan, when Prabhupada passed away from our mortal vision, shortly after that, he made a major court case in Bombay, where ISKCON is registered in India, stating that all of the properties of ISKCON all over the world should come to him, should come to the family. And he said he was not a sannyasi. He contended that only someone from a Brahmin family can be a sannyasi. So Prabhupada wasn't a sannyasi. Apparently the judge in the court said the whole world knows that he was a sannyasi. So he didn't win the case, but he contested that. And Giriraj Maharaj said that this first son, Mathura Mohan, had said to him, to Giriraj Maharaj, that, you see, I was born of Prabhupada and I had so much association, but I became a demon. Whereas you came from another land and you became devotees. I didn't become a devotee. Because actually he was meat-eating, which he definitely didn't learn at home. Mathura Mohan was meat-eating, and what else? He was a communist, he became a communist, which was very popular in Bengal at that time among the Bengalis who could say they couldn't get their act together and they wanted to rob the businessmen by becoming communists. Spoiled the economy of West Bengal for decades. The youngest son, Vrindavan Chandra, who seems to be the one who is most dear to Prabhupada, he was not like that. He was nice and devotional, but not very serious about devotion. Prabhupada tried later in life to engage him in his distributing Srila Prabhupada's books as a business, but he wasn't able to get that together either. He was materially and spiritually nice, but not very practical. So Srila Prabhupada once said that in this regard, from his own experience, that there are sons of the mother and sons of the father. Sons of mother, they remain at home with the mother and sit around like women at home. And the sons of the father, they get out in the field with the father. to help him in his work. So he used that analogy to say to his disciples that they shouldn't just sit at home enjoying the facilities, they shouldn't just sit in the temples enjoying the facilities provided by the Father, but they should help the Father in his work. So he was disappointed that his sons were sons of the mother and not sons of the Father. Eventually, after many, many years of struggle, he suffered a major loss. His servant robbed him. He was finished in business. Just little he could go on with, but there was, after struggling, coming up, going down, then he was gone. And then he saw it as Krishna's plan. He saw everything as Krishna's plan. When he was in Calcutta during the Second World War and there were bombs dropping, instead of going to the air raid shelter, as everyone was enjoined to do, he said, okay, I'll go later. I'll finish my prasad. I'm doing something important, taking prasad. He said he saw the bombs as Krishna in another form. This is Krishna's is a manifestation of Krishna's terrible Virata Rupa, which so scared Arjuna. Karala Dangshra, he saw the terrible teeth of the universal form. So Srila Prabhupada said, there's another aspect of Krishna. So when he lost all his wealth, he remembered the verse that Krishna told Yudhishthira. When Yudhishthira asked, why, when you, Krishna, are the husband of the goddess of fortune, why do we find that your devotees are often poverty-stricken? And Krishna replied, yasyaham anugrahanami harishe tad danang shanai. What's the next line? Tato tyajanti. I can't remember it now. Tyajanti dhanam swajana dukha dukita. The purport is that Krishna said to Yudhishthira, to those who I show my special mercy, I gradually take away all their wealth. Tato dhanam tyajanti asya swajana dukha dukita. Then they take away all his wealth. And then he and his family members become very sorry, and family members may reject him, and then he has no shelter other than me, Krishna told Yudhishthira. So Srila Prabhupada saw the hand of Krishna in this, and his business failure set the stage for his glorious future in his later life, coming out and going all over the world and preaching Krishna consciousness. His family members were not at all happy with his leaving home and eventually and not maintaining them and eventually taking sannyas. They blamed him. There was Vrindavan Chandra, the youngest son, who had mentioned. He, I believe it was him who related again to Giriraj Maharaj, or was it maybe Yashomati Nandan told me this, Yashomati Nandan Prabhu in Gujarat, told me that, see, the family members, they never forgave Prabhupada for just leaving them. Eventually he left. The story is well known that his wife had pawned his Bhagavata. Pawn is a system where you give something valuable to the pawnbroker. I'm not sure if that system still goes on in India with bank loans and all this and that, but it used to be something valuable like jewelry or something that could be sold. You give that and you get some money. And then if you don't pay it within a certain time, you lose. If you don't repay the loan in the course of time, then you forfeit the thing which you pawned out. So his wife didn't take it very seriously, but she thought it was... but Srila Prabhupada did take it very seriously. And when he told her that she wanted it to get, she explained she wanted to get biscuits to drink with her tea. And then Prabhupada, so we're told, said, well, it's either tea or me. And I would have been in Bengali, so I wouldn't have rhymed like that. And she said, oh, well, then I'll have to choose the tea. But, and jokingly. But she didn't see him again. He was gone. And then he struggled for some years in poverty, trying to get some preaching together, and eventually he went on to the Western countries, and that was a turning point, of course. There were, once he'd left home and the family, there was no family pressure or family obligation holding him back. Because once you leave home, you take sannyas. He officially took sannyas, which he was at 62 or 63, I can't remember. But practically, he was already a sannyasi. There was a little dabbling in business here and there, but from a distance. And his son Vrindavan would come, and he would try and. But basically, he's fully dedicated to spiritual activities without the burden of family members pulling him back. Now, generally, we don't advise family men with responsibility devotees to leave their families. It's not an excuse that Srila Prabhupada did so, that Ramanujacharya did so, that Raghavendra Swami did so, and so many others. They left their wives to fully dedicate to Krishna consciousness. We also want to develop, we also want to show that Vaishnavas are socially responsible. So in general, we don't recommend that. If you can do something outstanding, as Srila Prabhupada did, Ramanuja did, Raghavendra Swami did, then we can think about it. But it could be a lesson for others also. I mean, obviously, no one's situation is going to be exactly the same as Srila Prabhupada. Their relation with their wife is not going to be exactly the same. Or they're not going to be the same, and their wife isn't going to be the same. But there are some parallels which could be drawn. If the wife is a devotee but very interested in material success, which is very common nowadays, that both in India there's this idea everyone's going to be a success. And if she holds the husband back in spiritual aspirations, if you see your material hopes collapsing all around you, your income, your job, your business, whatever it may be, and others are scolding you as useless, then you can remember Srila Prabhupada and how he saw this is Krishna's hand, citing Krishna's words himself. Krishna has a plan for his devotees, especially those who genuinely want to serve him, but who have various obstacles, and Krishna may very kindly help to remove those obstacles. It wasn't easy for Srila Prabhupada. We wouldn't say, well, he was a Nitya Siddha, he was always in bliss. I mean, it wasn't easy. It's just like the gopis are always in bliss. But when Krishna left, it wasn't easy for them to tolerate his separation. Even when Krishna was in Vrindavan, it wasn't easy for them to go to him. They had to struggle. So it wasn't easy for Srila Prabhupada, but eventually Srila Prabhupada did break out from that situation. And we are, of course, eternally grateful for his doing so. As Srila Prabhupada, he did stress again and again and again. If you read his books, it's not just something that he wrote in the books that's just sort of for some kind of spiritual entertainment. He did repeatedly stress panchashordvang vanang rajit. When one gets over the age of 50, or Srila Prabhupada writes, when one attains the age of 50, he should go to the forest. In other words, vanaprastha life. So he recommended that. So even if both the husband and the wife are very serious about spiritual advancement, well, one sign of that is that they will not go on with the family entanglement in family life. They'll realize at the age of 50, we should start to become detached. It may be that even for some time, while one is in the prime of life, up to the age of 50 or so, one if one is trying to be successful in this material world and be a devotee, time to wind down all this going after money and prestige, which is that may be there in householder life, but it's antithetical to spiritual advancement. Remember, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Tayaparhita Chetasam, being attached to material enjoyment and opulence, it covers the intelligence. So at least at a certain stage, devotees should say, okay, we did that, we had enough, whatever we got by Krishna's grace, either we got so many things or we didn't get so many things, whatever, it's time to leave all that behind and let others go on with chasing after money and prestige and facilities and so many things. It's time for us to get focus exclusively on Krishna consciousness, because we have to remember Krishna at the time of death, and we have to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fully without being encumbered by all these things. We may say, well, if you have wealth and all this, then it's good preaching and this and that. But the better preaching is to just preach and not spend all your time trying to get wealth. So the first of all, I have to get wealth, and then I'll be a good preacher. First of all, I have to get a PhD, then I'll be a good preacher. If you have it, okay. If you don't, just preach, that's all. The main thing in preaching is to preach. And if you set an example of being detached from all those things, that's also very good preaching. So when you see the children are getting older and they're settled and this and that, then... Or you can plan that in advance to just retire from all these things and get fully into Krishna conscious activities. Vandaprastha means you can do it from home. It may be more efficacious to do so by leaving home so you don't get pulled in and entangled with all these social life and things. If you make a clean break, that's better. Of course, it may be when I say the children are settled, then it means they're married and they're stable in their life and this and that. But often nowadays, the children, they don't want to get married till they're 30 or more. And then Srila Prabhupada left home. When he left home, another reason the family members were upset with him, because at least one of his daughters wasn't married. And eventually, she didn't get married. I guess Srila Prabhupada thought, well, the sons are there. It's just like, If a man dies, then it's the duty of the eldest son to get his sisters married, to take responsibility for the family. But they never did it. His one sister remained unmarried throughout her life. So if the children insist that, well, no, I'm not going to get married till I'm 30, and you have to remain, and you have to be here until I get... You have to see, what are your priorities? How many children have you had? How many children do you have? Two children. How many, if we ask someone, how many children have you had? Ask me, I'm a sannyasi, how many children have I had? None. No, I've had millions and billions of children, because I've had millions and billions of lifetimes, and when I was a centipede, I don't know how many children centipedes have. When I was a guppy, one kind of fish, they have so many, they get thousands of little guppies, and the guppies eat some of them themselves. They eat their own little babies. So, just consider what you're doing with this life. Pumam bhavabdim nataretsa atmaha nridehama adyang sulabang sudur labang pavansu kalpo guru karnadaram mayanukulena nabasmateritam pumam bhavabdim nataretsa atmaha. If one has the facility of a human form of life, which is the only suitable boat for crossing the ocean of material existence. If one has, apart from having a good boat, one needs a good captain. So one has a good captain in the form of a a guru who can guide one. Again, the guru guide one means you have to do your work on the boat also. You don't just lie on the boat playing ping pong. You have to follow the instructions of the captain and cooperate with his guidance. Then you have the favorable winds in the form of Krishna's instructions to help us cross over, but still having all these facilities, if we don't cross over the ocean of birth and death, Krishna says, then we are killing ourselves. It's like committing suicide. So consider these things very carefully. Apart from our own spiritual advancement, we have to think that all this knowledge we have kindly received, we have a duty to share that with others, to be sons of the Father and not sons of the Mother. Sons of the Mother, then we'll always be harassed by the in-laws, who the cousins and the relatives who say, you have to be a success, you have to be materialistic. Yes, you can chant Hare Krishna, we don't mind, but we want to see how much money's in the bank balance. This way your life is spoiled. So follow Srila Prabhupada's glorious example. The stories from Prabhupada Lila Amrita, they're not just meant to be stories that we hear and say, oh, how nice. How Jai Prabhupada! Yeah, Jai Prabhupada, but right. But he wants you to follow that. And that's another reason why devotees appear to struggle in this world. We may say, well, he didn't struggle. He was a Nitya Siddha. He was always in bliss. Yeah, he struggled. Yeah, that's also to show an example to us who actually have to struggle if we're going to be Krishna conscious and if we're going to do something substantial to push on the mission of Krishna consciousness in this world. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and all glories to his faithful followers. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyavacha patita nam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Regarding Srila Prabhupada's domestic struggles, one more thought came in my mind, that surely Srila Prabhupada must have wanted that his wife also take initiation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But she didn't. She drank tea, which would be a disqualification, and it probably didn't want to. So that would have been a source of maybe tension or an exacerbation of the rift between them. Rift or misunderstanding or not being in complete harmony. I'd said that his wife was a faithful wife, and generally we can understand that to be true, in as much as there was no question of her leaving her husband, and it was just absolutely unthinkable. But at the same time, she had a will of her own, and she exercised that in a way which was not conducive for her advancement in Krishna consciousness. She was Krishna conscious, she was a devotee, but she wasn't willing to follow her husband to the extent that a wife, if she had been fully faithful, would be able to do it. She was a strong-minded woman. Of course, she had a very strong-minded husband also. Hukam Chalega, Prabhupada quoted that when his astrology chart was done. He quoted that the astrologer, looking at the chart, had said, Hukam Chalega, which is Hindi, Urdu, which means that he, namely this child, who was later to become Srila Prabhupada, his order will be followed. So Srila Prabhupada is very strong-minded also, but if it had been less strong-minded, probably he would have come under her thumb, or he would have got on with his Krishna consciousness, but without so much resolve, he would have been dictated to her. Anyway, that was all to our great benefit, ultimately, because Srila Prabhupada came out and gave us Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.